Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live on 101.3 KPCG and online. We're at kpcg.fm. Coming up on this weekend edition, if you're out in California, got to watch out for the sharks. Shark warning. Quite a few of them off the coast. Details about that. Also, a Russian fighter jet comes within 20 feet of U.S. Navy aircraft. The back and forth between U.S. and Russia continues. Also, student loans. If you've got some, they might get more expensive. That and a lot more coming up on this edition of Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, and we're online at kpcg.fm, live link at thetrumpet.com. If you'd like to follow us on Twitter, you can do that at kpcgfm. Also, send us any comments you have to comments at kpcg.fm. Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon, Abraham Blondeau here today. I always am interested in feats of athletic, athletic feats, I guess. Great athletic feats.
Athletic prowess.
Athletic prowess. There you go. There's this young fellow. I'm not even going to try to say his name because it's I'll slaughter it, I'm sure. But he's not really. They didn't really know much about him anyway. He's at this NBA combine where they go and they how fast can you run, how high can you jump, et cetera. And he set the record for this year. He had a 44.5-inch vertical leap. If you've ever measured your vertical leap, you know that that's extremely high. And he's 6'5", shooting guard, but really long arms, 6'11", wingspan, 44.5-inch vertical leap. So once you get up or hope to get up into those pro levels, you got to measure off the charts on those things. That's pretty impressive.
It's only 40 inches more than my vertical. So
that's true. The highest vertical leap recorded officially in the NBA belonged to who? This will be an easy one.
Vince Carter?
Nope. That's a good guess, though.
What's it? It's not Michael Jordan.
It is Michael Jordan.
It is Michael Jordan.
Air Jordan.
Okay.
48 inches.
Wow.
So when they called him Air Jordan, they weren't kidding. 48-inch vertical leap. That's amazing. So did you guys ever get yours tested in school?
No, we did the long jump. I don't think they had the equipment to keep up with how high we actually jumped. Like that stick with all the pegs sticking off of it that you would try to hit when you jump.
Mm-hmm.
But we always just did the long jump instead.
Yeah, we did. We did do high jump, at least when I was in track. But then we also tested how fast your slap shot is. I think that's, in Canada anyway, that's the real mark of manhood.
It's like how fast can you throw a baseball here in the States. Yeah. Yeah, we measured him in gym class one time, but it was odd. Like we didn't get a running start, and then we had to jump up and touch a wall. And then, like you'd reach up and they'd measure you and then you jumped up and they'd do the math, but you're jumping into a wall and you can't. The whole thing was weird.
Yeah.
And there was one guy, we were both on the basketball team, and he outjumped me by a bit. And I'm like, no way. I know I can outjump that guy. I think it was the way the test was. So in any event, I'm still a little salty about the results of that, but it wasn't close to 44. We'll put it that way. So anyway, it's kind of interesting to see some of the amazing athleticism that is out there. And there's always this big debate about who's better now. This is the raging debate. Is LeBron James better than Michael Jordan was? And I don't know. I don't think so. But the thing about watching Michael Jordan play for me was just there was so much grace in his movements, and he just did spectacular things in traffic with people being there, and he could just slide in between them and hang and come underneath the rim and do stuff that, I mean, you have to be impressed with LeBron's power because he's just this powerhouse of a guy, but it's just not as graceful to me. So I like watching Jordan better.
It's hard to deny him, though, if he beats the Warriors this year. I think it'd have to be a really serious conversation then.
Yeah, that's what keeps the sports talk guys employed. They have to stir up some sort of controversy. But the funny thing is they'll just talk about that, and the older guys are like, oh, we don't even think they're in the conversation.
Right.
You never saw, you know, Wilt in his prime or whatever. Because it's not like basketball just started today. They've been playing it for years. You know, it's hard to say what's better. It's hard to go back and look at old sometimes there isn't footage because it's too far back. But then if there is footage, sometimes it's all grainy and you don't get the sense of how great they were. So there's a lot of guys in that conversation. I'm not in that conversation. So I know that. But there's a lot of guys in that conversation.
Well, those guys were a lot tougher back then, and now the best teams have intentionally stacked their teams so that really no one has a chance to beat them until the finals. So, I mean, LeBron James has obviously just coasted through the East for 6 or 7 years in a row in the finals every single year.
And the rules have changed. You can't hand check anymore. And so because of that, it's a free pass to the basket every time. And so game changes. Early on, you know, they had the actual baskets up there. I mean, the ball would sit in the basket.
Right. So. Yeah.
You have to pull it out.
Yeah.
Wasn't there someone on a ladder nearby who would have to go get it every time?
Got to climb up the ladder and pull the ball out of the basket. So they were great, but it was just a different game back then.
It's like a ball boy, but for basketball instead of tennis.
Yeah.
They have to run out there up a ladder and throw it out.
Or they'd put the basket, like, by a balcony so that someone could reach over the balcony, take the ball out, and throw it back down. I've seen a clip of that before, too.
Oh, huh. Interesting.
Pretty smart. So someone can have a pretty good view from the balcony and also have a role in the game in a way.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea. Who's the best hockey player of all time, Abraham?
Well, I think it's Wayne Gretzky.
The great one.
Yeah, he...
Bobby Orr.
I mean, it depends how you look at things. Yeah. Like with any sport. Personally, Bobby Orr is my favorite hockey player just because he won the scoring title as a defenseman. That's just... crazy. But I mean, Wayne Gretzky, amount of goals he had, and no matter where he went, he was on a stacked Oilers team. But after he left there, he still, any team he was on, he brought it to, they were competitive, and just his vision. And I mean, he had, 84 points in 50 games. I mean, that's crazy. Like, that's two or three points a game, a goal or an assist a game. So just that pace and what he was able to do. So I think most people would say Wayne Gretzky. I like Bobby Orr the best, but people say Mario Lemieux is also up there, and so is Gordie Howe.
Yeah.
Those are kind of like the four names thrown around most of the time.
What about baseball?
Baseball? Well, a lot of people say Babe Ruth. I don't know if that's...
He's just iconic.
I wouldn't really know. But, Ichiro Suzuki. I liked him a lot.
There's a lot of people on that list.
Yeah.
And, that would be an interesting conversation to have. Mm-hmm. Some greats that came out of Oklahoma, too. Mickey Mantle. Yeah, some others.
No one's voting for Barry Bonds.
Johnny Bench came from Oklahoma, too.
Yeah, Johnny Bench.
Matt Holliday, who still plays for the Yankees now, he's from Oklahoma.
Yeah, so there's been a few guys around here. Yeah, Pete Rose, you know, he was suspended for life from baseball for betting on games. And he signs a lot of memorabilia and sells it, and he does a lot of tongue in cheek ones, or he'll sign a baseball and says, "I'm sorry, I ruined baseball, Pete Rose." But he's got one that relates to the steroid scandal with like Barry Bonds. He writes, he says hits, and he has how many? It's like 4,000 something, and then steroids zero. And he wants to get back in. I wish they'd let him in. Put him in the Hall of Fame, the guys. You know.
Well, he bet on baseball, which he knew not to do, but I don't think he was betting on his team to lose and then purposely making them lose, which would then obviously be a big deal.
Right. Yeah. I say let bygones be bygones.
Right.
Let the guy into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look at Michael Vick. He was illegal dog fighting ring, and he was able to come back and play. I mean, that's a lot more criminal, I think, than just betting on baseball.
Yeah. I know they have to make some rules to dissuade people from that behavior, but, he's the best hitter of all time, at least as far as statistically, if you're not counting, I guess, like Japanese baseball, where it's got a few guys that got like a million hits, but you're like, now where did they play, though? So anyway, that's interesting. If you guys have ever been out to the coasts, particularly California, you know, if you're on the beach, they fly helicopters over the top, and they... just keep an eye on things, make sure everything's okay. Helicopter announcement warns California paddleboarders that were out there. By the way, you're next to 15 sharks.
Oh, boy.
They were out there in the water, and the helicopter could see these sharks down there. Paddleboarders in Orange County got the shock of their lives on Wednesday when they heard a helicopter announcement that they were nearby a group of great white sharks. The school of sharks was swimming near people in the water at Dana Point, Dana Point's where I took my family there. That's we were in that water. Leading to Deputy Brian Stockbridge announcing over the helicopter loudspeaker to exit the water in a calm manner. Hey, keep it calm, guys. But there are sharks everywhere. He also said the sharks are as close as the surf line. So that's not far. That's not far from where you would be. There have been a number of shark sightings this week, and warnings have been posted up beaches around Southern California, including San Onofre State Beach, where a woman was bitten by a shark on the 29th of April. Los Angeles Times reports that shark activity has been put down to thriving aquatic ecosystem in the area, and that 10 to 20 juvenile sharks regularly swim near Long Beach. Can you imagine that? You're out there on the paddleboard. And the helicopter's like, by the way, be calm, keep it cool. But there are a bunch of great white sharks by you.
I wouldn't even go out that far in the water anymore, just because it seems like from a lot of news stories, sharks have been getting more bold than ever, unless you had like a chainmail suit on. Have you ever seen that?
No.
I saw a guy who went underwater next to like a, I guess he was in a cage, and then the sharks came up next to him, and he stuck his arm out because he had a chainmail suit on, and the shark bit as hard as it could, and he couldn't even feel it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen that. Because a man and his wife invented it, or they were testing it, and it's pretty cool, and they were underneath, but a shark came by. It wasn't great white. It was a smaller one. Came by, and it ripped the glove off her hand and ate the glove. It's just metal.
Yeah.
So anyway, they started eating the suit off of them. But
he needed more iron in his diet, apparently.
Yeah, his blood clots very quickly. But yeah, I saw the video of that. That would be. I mean, I've seen people paddleboard, and it's precarious. Like that's when you stand upright and you have to paddle.
Yeah,
and I mean, you fall down all the time unless you're really good at it. So I mean, I couldn't imagine trying to turn one of those boards around. Go back and calmly while you're standing up, and there are all these sharks around you.
Yeah, that's amazing. That would just be, that would be horrifying. So anyway, if you're out there, be careful. There's some sharks, and don't watch Jaws. Make you nervous. Of course, Russia and the U.S. have been playing a little bit of cat and mouse, I guess. This is from Fox News. Russian fighter jet comes within 20 feet of U.S. Navy aircraft. A Russian fighter jet flew alarmingly close to a U.S. Navy reconnaissance aircraft flying in the Black Sea on Tuesday, just one day before Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov visited Washington, came within 20 feet, and it remained that close for 5 minutes. In a statement issued Friday, the Russian officials called the jet's intercept a greeting maneuver. Greetings! We're just going to fly within 20 feet of you. So I like being greeted, but not like that.
Yeah, that's a close talker.
Yeah, I need a little more space.
In terms of aviation. But yeah, that's, I mean, a lot of these incidents have happened over the past 2 years where Russian aircraft, they simulate attack runs on American Navy vessels, or they buzz, that's what's called buzz ships, when they fly really close to them or get close with other aircraft.
Is that what they called that guy, Buzz Aldrin?
Probably. But yeah, you don't mess with Buzz though. I saw a video. He punched a guy in the face.
Yeah,
who was antagonizing him because the guy was a conspiracy theorist. He thought the moon landings weren't real, so he kept getting in his face, and like a 90-year-old Buzz Aldrin just popped him in the face. But anyway,
back to the Russia story.
Yeah, back to Russia U.S. relations. It's going to happen, and you just have to accept it, and you don't want to cause a huge incident. Or something like that. But as we've seen with Turkey, when Turkey shot down that Russian jet, that I think Russia is willing to run the risks if it gets them some kind of gain politically.
Yeah, that's you got to be good at flying to get that close and not have problems. For those that are thinking about getting student loans, you might want to consider this. Beginning in July, interest rates on new government loans are set to rise by 0.69 percentage point. According to Wednesday figures from the Department of the Treasury. For undergraduates, that could amount to nearly a 20% increase in the interest charges. New undergraduate loans from the Department of Education are due to carry an interest rate of 4.45%, up from 3.76% for the academic year ending in June. Rates on some graduate loans are set to rise from 5.31 to 6, and some may go up even to 7%. For example, they say the cost of a $10,000 loan would increase by about $400, according to online calculator at Bankrate. So, interest rates rising a little bit there, and if you're taking out a fair bit of money for a loan, especially a student loan, that adds up to a lot more you have to pay back. And hopefully you get a great job because you're going to be paying for a while.
Yeah. Student loans are always the thorn in the side because it's also one of the few loans you can't declare bankruptcy on, I believe. You're going to have to pay it off no matter what. So it does allow young people to get an education, and sometimes it works out, but it is a burden you have to live with for a long time, and especially if you just get married, you're young, and you have kids, and trying to go to school and trying to get a job, it's just, it can really break people.
Yeah, that's a big bill that comes due every month that you don't want to have to be paying. If you've got a nice job, you can do it, but if you don't, you're going to be struggling. So interesting to see that. Anytime they change the interest rates, even a little bit, you have to pay back more. Have you guys ever heard of avocado hand?
No.
Yes.
You have?
Yeah.
Okay, what is it?
I have avocado hands. I'm just kidding. Well, it's when you cut yourself from trying to open an avocado, right?
Yeah, that's right. Avocado hand is sending people to the ER because people don't know how to cut their fruit. This is happening more in different areas in the UK. In the US, they say that it's not happening more, but it is a seasonal thing. It may be rising somewhat because avocados are becoming more trendy. People like the health benefits. I didn't know this was a thing, but people hold it in their hand and they try to cut it and end up cutting their hands.
Why would you?
I don't know.
Keep it in your hand. That's what a cutting board is for example.
We have avocados pretty often at home, and my wife does that. She puts it down on the cutting board.
Right.
Well, because I've been using them when I make breakfast. Sometimes I just throw them in whatever, like the cereal. I'm just kidding.
That's avocado flavored Cheerios.
But even if I hold it in my hand, I very carefully cut halfway through, like, because there's the pit in the middle. You cut it halfway through, then you flip it over, and then you cut the other half, so it never comes within an inch or two of your hand, if you're going to use your hand for it. Otherwise, I just do it in the cutting board or try to rip it in half with my bare hands to impress my wife, but something like that.
That would be hard, and it would smush everywhere, and you'd have smushed avocado. Yeah, I had never heard of it. I realized that would be an actual thing, but it happens enough to where it is an issue. And so the emergency room is having to deal with this. Sometimes it's as simple as a little slash. Other times people lose use of their hand because they cut down through nerves. And like some people are pushing, you know, they'll be cutting and they'll put the knife all the way through their hand.
Oh.
So this is a thing that people deal with. So it was news to me, but apparently you knew about it. So
yeah, well, it's I saw a report about that last week or early. It's okay. Probably the same one, but
yeah.
I just wonder if these kinds of situations are caused by something else. People being impaired by something while they're trying to open an avocado.
Like being like just distracted or something?
Yeah, either. Well, I mean, because there's plenty of other things going on, like alcohol, marijuana. I don't know. Like, I wonder if just something else is in the play here, because most times people are very careful when they're using a knife at any time. And especially to go through your entire hand. I mean, that's a, I don't know what would compel someone to make that decision. So I just wonder if there's another impairment that's causing it. It's not just people being foolish with an avocado.
Well, it's got the pit in the middle.
Yeah.
And I could see maybe people are trying to cut it and they hit that and it's hard and it's like push harder and then it slips off and then it goes through their hand. I could see something like that maybe happening.
Right.
If they weren't familiar with the inner workings of the avocado, I don't know. It's a thing. So, you know, you can imagine, you know, you work at the ER and you're like, we got another avocado hand. You got to deal with it. Interesting. You're listening to Trumper Radio Live here on 101.3 KPCG. Brand new Kia David coming up this weekend. The title is Guardian Angel. The idea of traditional family is under furious assault in our Western world. So is education. These foundational institutions of human happiness are in danger of extinction. And this is talking about that topic and in relation to a book titled Guardian Angel, written by Melanie Phillips. So really great program. Make sure you listen for that. And you can see it at thetrumpet.com and on television this weekend. Also, the Trumpet Daily Radio Show with your host, Stephen Fleury. That's coming up. And the Trumpet Hour Week in Review program as well. Stop and check out thetrumpet.com. Top story today. Puerto Rico's $123 billion bankruptcy will impact more than your wallet related to that, Puerto Rico's Lesson for America, and Solve Your Money Troubles. So those are at thetrumpet.com. I'm Dwight Falk, Grant Hurge, and Abraham Blondeau here today. Grant, you have an interesting write-up from The Federalist. This one screenshot captures everything wrong with media coverage of President Trump. describe the screenshot for us.
Well, there was a Time feature story about what Mr. Trump does after hours. I think it was called Trump After Hours, Donald Trump After Hours, something like that. And it talked about a lot of things. Obviously, there's like a 20,000 square foot mansion part of the White House where the president lives, and it gave a lot of interesting insight into that and the what his work day is like and the aides who are constantly bringing people in to visit him. And yet there was one paragraph in there that just talked about basically he had a few people over for dinner, and this is the paragraph that sparked all this outrage from the media. It says, "The waiters know well Trump's personal preferences. As he settles down, they bring him a Diet Coke while the rest of us are served water, with the vice president sitting at one end of the table. With the salad course, Trump is served what appears to be Thousand Island dressing instead of the creamy vinaigrette for his guests. When the chicken arrives, he is the only one given an extra dish of sauce. At the dessert course, he gets two scoops of vanilla ice cream with his chocolate cream pie instead of the single scoop for everyone else. The tastes of Pence are also tended to. Instead of the pie, he gets a fruit plate." So the clear tone of that is that the president and the vice president are getting special treatment and neglecting their guests. And so the CNN, like the Chiron, I think it's called.
Yeah, the graphic they put on the screen with the text.
Right.
Yeah.
The title while they're talking about this story says, "President gets two scoops of ice cream, everyone else one." That's actually on the screen of CNN.
Right.
So they basically made a huge deal about this, and yet who really cares?
Yeah, that's just digging for problems that don't exist. I would imagine that most people, if they were there and invited to the White House, I imagine if you really wanted another scoop, you probably could get one. You know, they probably would be okay with it. But, you know, even if they weren't, what difference does it make? to paraphrase Mrs. Clinton, at this point, what difference does it make? It's crazy. I mean, they could write the same thing about me in my house. Like, if we're having dessert, I usually get the bigger piece because I'm the biggest person there. So I don't know if that's an outrage as well, but it goes the same at my house too.
Yeah, he's the president of the United States. Like, come on, he deserves two scoops of ice cream. Doesn't matter who he is. Yeah. Like, he controls nuclear launch codes. He makes decisions that affect foreign policy of billions of people.
You can do whatever he wants.
If you want two scoops of ice cream, just give it to him.
Get
it's not
the
a big
man
deal.
Another scoop of. Is there an ice cream shortage? So they're really digging for anything that makes it seem like he's just out of control.
Right. It really is worse than satirical coverage. This is not a joke. This is stuff that is actually on the major news networks, and it has a lot of people blasting him on Twitter, people with official blue check marks next to their names, people who are actual supposedly objective journalists. One of them just took a screenshot of that one paragraph from the article and then said, "This explains a lot." And then another one said, "A man unable to restrain his urges." So talking about one extra scoop of ice cream being just a gigantic problem, apparently.
Now that's going to disqualify people from office, huh? They went with the two scoops of ice cream. Isn't it so funny how the media, I guess, or whoever is being critical, they just are flagrantly disregard lots of very important laws. and there's all kinds of things that happen. But yet, when they decide to turn their glance, you know, and look with the magnifying glass at somebody that they don't like, something as simple as having an extra scoop of ice cream disqualifies you from being the president of the United States.
Yeah, well, I'm just glad it's ice cream and not like a woman like Bill Clinton. Talking about controlling your urges.
Right.
I mean,
but right, yeah.
I mean, at least it's just, he can eat whatever he wants. And at least we have a president there who, I mean, there's lots of questions about his past, maybe people have, but at least he's proven to be a pretty normal person in terms of what he does in his private life, like with His after hours, he's just having a nice meal.
Well, the media is undercutting any credibility, if they have any, because it's just silliness. It's just a silly thing to even talk about. And so you have to, if you're a clear thinking person, you have to think, okay, if they're willing to go after him on that, that just shows obviously their whole agenda is to make him look bad. So no matter what they say, even if there was truth to something and it was serious, you'd have to question it. Like, well, is this really true, or are they just trying to make him look bad?
Well, yeah, and at this point, it's almost like the media is just programmed to say the exact same thing. It happened just a couple days ago with James Comey, the FBI director, being fired. They were all outraged at him and hoping that he would be fired, but because Mr. Trump did it, they all had to go on the attack at the same time. It really does seem like there's some deeper coordination there between the different outlets. They should have been happy about that, but for some reason they weren't. And even Stephen Colbert on his late night show started off by saying that James Comey had been fired, and all of his liberal audience started applauding. And he said, "No, no, you're not supposed to be happy about that. As if you're not fitting the programming here."
Yeah, they didn't give him the handout before the show. Mm-hmm. This is how you're supposed to feel about this, right. And why. Yeah, really, really bizarre. It must be a slow news day, you know, because obviously you got to fill the headlines with something, and so they keep looking for something to talk about. And it's got to get down to something like, you know, scoops of ice cream. Boy, oh boy.
They all react the exact same way. It's just, it's insanity. One of them, I can't even say exactly what he said, but I'll paraphrase. It's the guy, and this is an official journalist again, "This is the most disrespectful thing I have ever read." And then another one said, "Seriously, this is how jerks behave." Like, the same guy said both of those things.
It's the most disrespectful thing he has ever read. Wow.
Just because the White House staff happens to know the preferences of the president and the vice president while not knowing the preferences of the guest, even though the guests, I'm sure, would be allowed to ask for whatever they wanted.
Yeah, that's amazing to me. The thing I thought about when I saw the outrage about this and getting the extra scoop of ice cream, I thought, okay, well, you could go look at pretty much any former president, especially, say, the last one we just had. How much did you get paid for speaking engagements?
$400,000.
He got $400,000 after he was the president recently.
Yeah, yeah. And then you know, if we want to talk about equality or fairness or whatever they're trying to get at, you know, how do they travel around? Private jets and you know, all these cars and all these things. But you know, if you were to say something about that, which I don't think is necessarily a problem, but I'm just saying, they would say, "Well, what do you expect? He's the president." You know, you remember too, when there was the State of the Union a couple of years back, and one of the members in that was there yelled, "You lie," at the president, which he was actually correct. He was lying. Not saying he should have said it, but that happened. And the media came out, and they were almost crying, like, you cannot disrespect the office. You cannot treat somebody this way. And now they're going to bury a guy because of an extra scoop of ice cream? I mean, that's an embarrassment to journalism.
Well, speaking of disrespecting the office, I actually took the time to read the almost 4,000-word timepiece, and there was even a part that said most of his staff still bothers to call him Mr. Trump, as if that was strange. And he is the president, so you should be calling him Mr. and not walking around saying, "Hey, Donald," and things like that.
Right.
But apparently they didn't like the fact that his own staff has respect for him.
Now they're digging. They are digging, but that's just, it's so sad. I mean, if if there's something to legitimately talk about, then good, they should. But they just ignored almost every major problem from the last administration, including giving ransom money to Iran to get hostages back, and lying about it repeatedly, and then admitting they lied about it, and the nuclear deal, and then lying about that, admitting they lied about it. And that was all, that's okay. But ice cream, that's where we draw the line now.
Well, yeah, it's just embarrassing to the world. I mean, what does Vladimir Putin think about America when they're criticizing him for ice cream? I mean, what about some more investigations into Putin? That would make some good headlines for American journalism. But also, when they fired James Comey, a bunch of journalists found Putin, he was about to play a hockey game, and which he scored 7 points in, big surprise. But anyway, he
might be in the conversation for greatest hockey player of all time.
In Russia.
In Russia.
Yeah.
Well, he scores, and deep sea diver.
If the game's played in Russia, then he's definitely the best player.
And treasure hunter.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, and riding bears with no shirt on, but that was photoshopped. But anyway, they ask him like, "Well, what do you think of James Comey being fired?" He's like, "I don't care. It's an American domestic issue. I don't have an opinion on it." He's like, "I'm gonna go play hockey."
Right.
So, I mean, just the media is just making America a laughingstock in the eyes of the world, and it's delegitimizing the very government that protects you from terrorism and all that sort of thing. It's just such a foolish move by the media. They're just destroying their country.
Well, and the line has blurred between serious journalism and comedy and satire. It's all the same now.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't tell who's the, I mean, the late night guys are saying the same thing that you're hearing on some of these so-called, you know, serious news shows. They're all saying the same thing pretty much. And they're, or even The Onion, something that's purposefully satire. This seems like it's pulled from the headlines of The Onion.
Right.
So whoever their writing staff is, which I think they're really funny, they could probably command a pretty good salary right now working for some of these other outlets, because that's how ridiculous some of these headlines are.
Well, and I've even seen a lot of videos where a lot of liberals say their main news source is Jon Stewart whenever he used to have that Daily Show. It really was like they knew that the mainstream media and the comedy shows were in lockstep with each other, and so they might as well listen to the comedy show that also backs up their point of view but is a little bit more entertaining. That's really what they were going for. Getting back to the food comparisons, though, Mr. Obama obviously had personal preferences as well, and yet these same outlets actually were gushing about how he had Friday night steak night. Or his wife contributed to the whole wheatification of grilled cheese sandwiches. So obviously they were just in love with the way the Obamas interacted with food and changed our interaction with food as a society.
Yeah, it's baffling. It's just absolutely baffling. That's at the Federalist. This one screenshot captures everything wrong with media coverage of President Trump, and there's a really great Trump A Daily Radio show from this week, if you missed it, talking about some of the way the media is handling these things, getting into more of the coverage of the Comey firing and so forth. So just really interesting. Go back and listen to that. And this is just unbelievable. You'd think we were kind of making it up, but that's what's going on. So you're almost speechless, you know.
Yeah.
Grant, thanks for bringing that to us.
Thank you.
You're listening to Trump Radio Live here on 101.3 KPCG, online at kpcg.fm, and a live link here at thetrumpet.com as well. This is the weekend edition. Dwight Falk, Grant Hurd, and Abraham Blondeau. You can follow us on Twitter if you'd like to, at kpcgfm. Also, any comments, you can go ahead and send those to comments at kpcg.fm. Abraham, you've got a really interesting story about a sea creature that washed up. They don't know what it is exactly, but before we get to that, a related note, because we were talking about dinosaurs recently. They found this really, really cool dinosaur, and I'm the one bringing this news today.
Yeah, it's catching on
to the. I'm the new paleontologist here. Washington Post. They say Rare is winning the lottery. New dinosaur fossil so well preserved it looks like a statue. And a lot of times when they find dinosaurs, it's in pieces, and you got to know how to put them together. This guy is pretty much intact, and what happened was, they found him in a mine. March 21st, 2011, Sean Funk was digging in Alberta's Millennium Mine with a mechanical backhoe when he hit something much harder than the surrounding rock. A closer look revealed something that looked like no rock he had ever seen, just row after row of sandy brown discs, each ringed in gunmetal gray stone. What he had found was a 2,500-pound dinosaur fossil, which was soon shipped to the museum in Alberta, where technicians scraped extraneous rock from the fossilized bone and experts examined the specimen. And as Michael Greshko wrote for the National Geographic, the more I look at it, the more mind-boggling it becomes. Fossilized remnants of skin still cover the bumpy armor plates dotting the animal's skull. Its right forefoot lies by its side, its five digits splayed upward. I can count the scales on its sole. Kayla Brown, a postdoctoral researcher at the museum, grins at my astonishment. We don't just have a skeleton, he tells me. We have a dinosaur as it would have been. And what they think happened to it was, it was down by a river, and a flood came through or something and washed it away, and it went down into the ocean, I guess, or was some big body of water, and it went to the bottom, and the rock or whatever, the sediment got around it and preserved it as it was, dried out, and was in this mine, which used to be water, they think. And because it died and was preserved in that way, it remains. They have a picture of it at the Washington Post. It's really pretty amazing because it looks like a statue of a dinosaur, but it's an actual dinosaur. It's really cool.
Yeah, those are really the most exciting discoveries. I know a while ago they found like a dinosaur foot that still had skin on it because it was preserved in something. So they actually had like dinosaur skin that they could analyze. And yeah, that's just incredible that all that happened in Alberta too. Saskatchewan, where I'm from, is just the province to the right of it, just to the east of it. Saskatchewan used to be a huge lake.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of dinosaurs and everything in Alberta, they lived there because there's all the water that Saskatchewan had because it was a huge lake. And so not surprised that something somehow disturbed that and drowned all the dinosaurs in that area. Because if you go northeast of Calgary by Edmonton, you get to the Royal Tyrrell Museum in Alberta. And it has incredible dinosaur museum, one of the best in the world. And that's where they find all these different dinosaurs in that area.
Yeah, so really amazing. And you can see it at the Washington Post. They have a picture of it, and it does look like a statue. So that's amazing. Now, this other thing that you found from the express.co.uk, they say, what is it? Mysterious sea creature washes up on the coast of Indonesia. It's this giant blob.
Yeah, it's if you look at the picture, you don't know what it is. Doesn't look like any living creature. Well, that's because it's dead. But but it's about 50 feet in length, so it's huge. It's the picture, when you look at it, it's been dead for a few days, so it's already decomposing. But no one can figure out what it is. Some people thought it was a giant squid, but it's not. Scientists think it's a whale, but they're going to do some DNA testing to confirm what it is. But anyway, yeah, it just looks like a huge sea blob creature that washed ashore. And so they're trying to figure out what it is, and they're also trying to figure out how to get rid of it.
Blow it up with dynamite.
Yeah.
That's what they do sometimes. I don't know if they use dynamite, but I mean, sometimes when whales are dead and they wash up, I think they blow them up. Because if they don't, they will blow up. They fill with whatever that gas is, and then they just explode. And actually, I have seen footage of it before, where they've blown some of them up to get rid of them. So it's unique. That's for sure.
Yeah, I did see one where some workers were working around it and exploded while they were working around it.
Oh,
and some of the guys got blasted.
It's a memorable day.
Yeah.
What happened to you? That whale blew up on me.
Marine biology. It's a minefield. but yeah, you can at the story there, you can see pictures of it and. Yeah, it just looks like a huge blob of something. And they thought it was a ship, actually, when they first saw it. But it's not. So, and there's been lots of other sea monsters that wash up on shore that no one has ever seen before. And they think they're deep sea creatures that float to the surface and they got washed up. Yeah. But, yeah, just lots of crazy stuff.
I was looking at they have a slideshow there of some of the ones they found in the past as well. And there's that one that looks like a giant snake. It's like the man standing next to it is pretty small. And I just thought, well, what if you actually saw that thing alive?
Yeah.
It'd scare me to death. What is that thing? You know, there's a lot of stuff like that. And what is down in the depths of the oceans? We don't want to know, I don't think.
Yeah, well, the deeper you go, the scale gets bigger. Like you have giant squid, you have these huge crabs. They're called sea spiders off the coast of Japan, and they're 12 feet.
Yeah,
but they look like huge spiders, and you have all these huge things in the ocean, and we don't. I think it's good we haven't seen them.
There's probably a reason they have to stay down there because they would not coexist with us very well.
Yes, yeah. So, it's just even in Russia, in the Caspian Sea and other lakes, deep lakes they have there, some fishermen have found some things also off the Arctic when they go deep sea fishing, and some of those things are terrifying. Like they have these huge jagged teeth. Their eyes are red, and they it's like demon fish.
Yeah.
But that's for whatever reason, they're designed to live at that depth and be predators down there. So, yeah, it's just scary stuff down there.
Amazing. You can check that out at express.co.uk. Mysterious sea creature washes up on the coast of Indonesia. A couple other sites are covering it as well. You get an idea of what it looks like. They got the pictures there for you. A couple other notes before we get to your final story today. If you're planning on traveling to Europe this summer, the U.S. has issued a travel alert for Europe. They did this just a while ago. U.S. State Department issued a summer-long travel alert for Europe, warning citizens of the continued threat of terrorist attacks. After recent incidents in the U.K., France, and Sweden, Al-Qaeda and ISIS have, quote, the ability to plan and execute terrorist attacks in Europe, it said. So I think some other nations have done that to us over the years, and now they're doing it for Europe. So a lot of people like to take a trip to Europe, a lot of nice places to see, but you got to be alert, especially when you're going through airports and public transit. Those are some of the big targets. So something to keep in mind if you're heading over there.
Yeah, I think it's a testament to the new age we live in that when you want to go on vacation, you have to consider whether it'd be a likely target for terrorism.
Yeah, just especially as a Westerner. Yeah.
So it's just kind of a sad state of affairs that places in Europe aren't really that safe anymore. I mean, the probability is probably very low that you would be involved in that, but still, it's happened quite a bit. And the most recent attacks have all been with vehicles, terrorists taking huge lorries and just ramming them into a crowd or a shopping center. So, yeah, it's just you always have, now you have to think twice before going to one of these more popular tourist destinations.
Another note here, this is reported by Time Magazine in relation to government. You know, sometimes you feel like here in the U.S. especially, there's a debate about government, how big should it be? And inevitably, when it gets bigger and gets kind of bloated, there can be issues. This happened in Tanzania. 9,932 government employees in Tanzania were fired because they forged academic records. So almost 10,000 of their government workers had lied about their academic background. So when the government gets pretty big like that, you're going to have some of that in there as well. So of all the things, I guess, well, you don't want anybody lying about anything, but criminal background and academic background, those two are important.
Yeah, it is important to have a certain amount of bureaucracy in place that there are checks and balances to vet people before they have really responsible positions. But at the same time, I think it costs, how much was it? Several million a day just to run the government. Like, it's a huge amount of money. I forget how much. But, I mean, that's just to run the government. Like, that's just normal salaries, like pencils, paper, electricity costs. And just a huge amount of money to run the huge American government. So it just would be really interesting to see if we took an honest look at governments around the world, how much could be cut out. And saved if favoritism was removed, if all these old archaic systems were updated or something like that.
Yeah, it probably would change quite a few things. You've got a historical note for us here on the German military and having a powerful political pull in the past and still do.
Yeah, Mr. Stephen Fleury has been talking about this on the Trumpet radio daily radio show, just about how the German army has a Nazi problem, some... there's been some Nazi sympathizers in the German military. I just think it's interesting to look at the German army because it does have a strong historical background with directing the course of German history and politics. And if for Americans and people in the West and British people who grew up in those kinds of institutions, the military has no political influence. I mean, there are advisors from the military who advise on military matters, but the army isn't a huge part of running domestic affairs and that sort of thing. But in a lot of these other countries, the army was the government for a long time, and that's true in Germany. I think it's interesting to consider that with the direction Germany is heading. When we see it move from a more pacifist mindset to a more aggressive one, that... the modern German state, a lot of historians believe, you can, from around the 1700s to Hitler, 1945, it can be described as one long constitutional battle between liberalism, people wanting democracy, and the traditionalists who wanted autocratic state. like it was under like Frederick the Great, under the Prussian Empire. And so for those centuries, it was a battle between the military and the political elites trying to create like a German empire, and the liberals who wanted to create a democratic state like what they had in France and Great Britain. And both sides would win and lose over time. What's interesting when you look at that history is that the German army always stopped the liberals from getting power, or they were able to muscle them out and create a situation where someone like Hitler could come to power.
Yeah, and even with Hitler's time period there, there were different sort of political groups, if you could call them that, that were ex-military that fought in World War One, and they went around and they were like the pre-SS, but they weren't, but they were a different thing, and they would go around and they would stiff arm people,
yeah.
Literally, and cause people to get in line. And then of course there were some battles between that group and other groups, military groups, but at the end of the day it was intimidation. And when Hitler was coming to power, he could kind of leverage those groups, but then sit there and say, well, I don't know, I'm not responsible for what they're doing.
Yeah.
And then ultimately, of course, he was getting his way, and then he did finally just take over and admitted that. But there were those even factions there. There was, I think they called them, what do they call them? Like the steel helmets or something like
that.
Yeah,
the brown shirts.
Yeah.
Was another one.
There was another one. There was a couple, and they were like World War One veterans, and they would kind of mobilize and be a strong arm. And there was always some infighting and so forth. But, even just on the ground level, they would go through neighborhoods and kind of run the show. And that's a pretty extreme case, of course, but that was sort of that history leading up to Hitler's time.
Yeah, and I think it's good to consider because to us is a very foreign concept, but to Germany, that's the way they've always been. Germany's traditions politically is not democracy. They've only had democracy since World War II ended, and the failed example of the Weimar Republic in the 1920s. Before that, they were an enlightened absolutism, which means they want a strong leader, they want a king or someone like that, but they're enlightened. They're not killing their own people, they're not doing that. They're giving people benefits and they're enlightened. They have morals, but they're a strong leader. And that's the way Germany was for centuries. Germany never had a moment like Magna Carta or the American Revolution or the French Revolution where the people rose up and they overthrew the king, and then they set up a democracy. Germany never had that experience. The people never fought for democracy. It was always imposed by them by the West
right.
After they were defeated in a war. And so it's a foreign political concept. Now it's taken root a little bit more. But the German army was always a part of the military. It was like one of the checks and balances of government. You had the king, you had the parliament, and then you had the military. Those are the three arms of government. And the military generals are always jostling for position with parliament and who would influence foreign policy, that sort of thing. And it led Germany to try to be an empire because the military wants to conquer. They see how weak Europe is and they want to conquer it. And we see the same kind of thing today. Why is the German army suddenly getting more money? Why are they? Why is Germany pushing for a stronger EU army? It's probably because the German military elites are gaining more influence in the government. And so they're pushing for more power in shaping German foreign policy. So we're seeing a return to this, to the power of the German military elites, like there have been for centuries in Germany. The only problem with that, there's a few different problems, but the big problem is it fosters the chances of another leader coming up like Hitler, who could be a lot more aggressive and could dismiss the 70 years of democracy in Germany.
Right, and that's something that Hitler spent a lot of money on in the lead up to his really exploding on the world scene, I guess, is they ramped up their military production and they got their army and their military branches up to speed very quickly, to the point where they were ignoring a lot of other things just to get that machine going. And so we've seen a historical pattern of that happening not too long ago. And so it is interesting if they're, you have to look at it and say, okay, well, if they're building it up again, what are they going to do with it? Will it be different this time? history says no, and prophecy says no too.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Germany's already one of the top arms exporters in the world anyway. Like, even under the more pacifist leadership of Angela Merkel, they already are a leader in arms exports, tanks, guns, munitions, all those different things. And as you said, if Germany did get more aggressive, if they were more assertive with their military, everyone would hope that they wouldn't repeat history. But 99% of the time, history repeats itself. There are some cases where leaders did change things, and they didn't repeat the same mistakes of the past. But 99% of the time, it's not like that. And so, as you say, with Bible prophecy, there's lots of written about it, the Trump.com, that there's a very clear pattern where Germany is rearming itself. The military is getting more power politically, and it's leading to the same kind of mistakes, just in a more sophisticated manner, that happened in 1945. It's not going to be as overt as Hitler was, and as the brown shirts, and as all those factions forcing the local people to go their way. It's going to be more sophisticated this time around, but it's still going to happen nonetheless.
Yeah, and you know, if there's a threat, which there really is, to Europe and to Germany, is right now the threat's terrorism. But I think if you look further than that, you could look at Russia. They always look at Russia, and they're always a bit of a threat there. So they would feel justified in defending themselves and that type of thing. But where do you stop? Like, what if you have some success? Do you stop your military campaigns, or do you just keep rolling along? And their nature has been to keep rolling along very aggressively. And so it is interesting to and the other thing too about, like, say, history repeating itself is a lot of times a couple of generations have passed, so people that experienced World War II, they're not around anymore, or there's not many of them left. And so the new generation always thinks, well, we wouldn't do that. We wouldn't act like, you know, the people that came before us. And then inevitably you do end up doing the same sort of thing, but you don't realize it until you're in it, probably, just because, you know, it was a different generation. It wasn't your personal experience.
Yeah. Well, I think Germany is interesting too, because of the Holocaust. There is an element of shame, of self-restraint because of that history with what happened. But this new generation, they're shedding off that restraint and that sense of shame or whatever it might be there. Because that's their grandparents' sins. It's not my sin. So I'm not going to have to feel bad about it anymore. That's basically the new movement in Germany. And while, I mean, you can't hold the sins of a particular generation over the heads of the nation today, it's still a warning of history that you have to be careful. And so with the German youth, with this young generation coming up, you do see a breaking away from the traditional German way of doing things after World War II. Just be very careful not to offend the Jews, not to offend the world, not to give the appearance that you're being aggressive militarily because of that past, because they're very ashamed of that past. But now you have the young generation not doing that. They want their nation to have more self-esteem. They want to be nationalistic, believe in Germany. And those things aren't bad. You should be proud of your country. The problem is, if you don't look at the past for wisdom, you can end up making the same mistakes again. And the way you seek national pride could actually be the same way that Hitler tried to inspire pride in his country.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard to, particularly for that country, historically, it's hard to have that national pride without it boiling over to being, well, we should rule the world, though.
Yeah.
but that is the way that, I mean, a lot of nations feel. Russia just had their military parade that they always have, celebrating the victory in World War II over the Nazis. That was just a couple of days ago. And they were interviewing some people there, and they were proud of their military and proud of their history and so forth. And the one person said, you know, look at all of the people. Look at how many we are. Who could defeat us? We're the greatest nation in the world. And I guess that's what you would say. That's the narrative. But, you know, that they were looking around and considering themselves and saying, hey, nobody could beat us. Look at how many we are. And so, you know, that's in the minds of of people in different nations, leaders probably, and some of the people on the ground saying, you know what? we're pretty powerful, and we should dominate. And so that's as much as you know, people want peace, probably, there is some of those dominating characteristics in a lot of different countries.
Yeah, well, I think that's just human nature, and that's why history of man is the history of empires. One nation always rises to dominate the rest for a while until they're overthrown by another one. And for the last 70 years, America's been the empire. They've been the dominant nation, especially since the Soviet Union fell. But if America is no longer the empire, someone else will fill the void. That's just the way it will always work. That's just the way humans are. And so one nation is going to do it. And you already can see it with Russia, China, and people don't think about Europe. But what the trends we've been talking about in Germany are pointing towards them filling that vacuum once it's gone. And that's just always the way it is, unfortunately, with humans, unless we change the essence of our nature. And that is that with the power that's available, we have humility. And we have the wisdom to look to the past and not repeat the same mistakes.
Yeah, and you can see it, a country like Russia or Germany, and there does seem to be a you know, this overall thought of rising in the world power, and that seems to be a big a point of emphasis. And what are we doing in the West? Shying away from it, and we're just so steeped in moral decline and infighting. And that's the way empires rise and fall historically.
Yeah, well, I think historians will look back on us and say, like, well, yeah, as soon as the news started talking about how much their ice cream their president was eating for news, we knew their empire was going to fall. Like, if we look back at what other historians have said about empires right before they fell, it's the same thing that's happening inside our own nation. And we're so blinded by our own selfish goals inside of America and Britain and everything that we're not willing to see the writing on the wall on our nations. And it's a terrible state of affairs.
More about that at thetrumpet.com. Also on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show this week, some of the things, the trends you can see in Germany and in Europe. That's all the time we have for today on Trumpet Radio Live. Nuki to David. Also, Trumpet Daily Radio Show, Trumpet Hour Week in Review, coming your way this weekend. Thanks for joining us today and this week. Myself, Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon, Abraham Blondeau. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you on Monday.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.